Unified Review Theory.
Hello!
Hello! And here we are again. After, I think at the end of last one, you said it would be a couple of weeks until the next podcast.
I said it would be between a week and a year. And so I was exactly correct.
Well, this is pretty much equidistant between those two periods of time.
Here we are again. It's Unified Review Theory. And yes, it's been an awfully long time since our first podcast. But we're busy guys. Do we need to explain why we're so busy, or just...
No, not at all. Who cares?
absolutely no one. You're right. Okay, so we're back with Unified Review Theory. It's a podcast that we do where we talk about stuff. Yeah.
And we give it marks out of 10. That's our USP.
That's correct. The USP of URT is that we review everything in the world and give it marks out of 10, thereby enabling...
It's quite a thin USP, really.
It's not a million miles away from what other people in the world are doing, from what, you know, many hundreds of thousands of magazines, books, websites.
You could debate both the U and the SP, really.
Well, it's not selling, so... It's not...
Anyway, it's what we do. Get off my back, man.
Okay, this has gone a bit off the rails already, so... So in this podcast we're going to look at a couple of subjects, things, be they, you know, films, books, experiences, people, foodstuffs, and we're going to review them and give them marks out of 10. What are we going to be looking at first, James?
Well, this is actually a special holiday summer special of URT podcast.
Yeah.
Because we recently went on holiday with our respective families.
We did.
And as well as taking in breathtaking views and healthy walking and beer and things, we watched a couple of things. And since we both watched them at the same time in the same place, you thought it'd be a good chance to review them.
It'll be a rare opportunity for us to have actually seen the same things. So, we've seized on them as some of the... Also, they were both eminently reviewable.
It's almost as if we chose them merely because it'd be very easy to spend half an hour mocking them.
Now, you've kind of given away what we're going to do there. People might have been wondering if these were going to be really great things that we were going to talk about.
But the problem with really great things is you go, oh, that was good, wasn't it? It's like, yeah, it really was, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay. Whereas with the Elvis musical Harum Scarum, which is our first review... Basically, well, I don't know where to start.
Harum Scarum, directed by Gene Nelson in 1965.
It had a director.
Well, I'm pretty sure he was, you know, drunk or in a coma for most of it. But technically, yes, it had. He's a movie musical veteran. So he really has no excuse. It's a film that promises Elvis bringing the big beat to Baghdad in a riotous rockin' rollin' adventure spoof. Now, you know, I saw that in the shop, and how could I not buy a film that said Elvis bringing the big beat to Baghdad? I mean, just that phrase conjures up so many images in your mind.
And how much did it cost you?
$3.99.
Which I think is overpriced.
If it had been another 50p, I think I'd have thought better of it. But...
just on the cusp of jokes purchase.
Just worth $3.99. Although, you know, given the downturn in the economic climate in the month since, I don't think I would now. Knowing what we know now, I don't think I would.
So as Neil says, it's Elvis going to the Middle East to
describe the plot to you of the film, because some of our listeners may not have seen this film. It's in it. Elvis plays singer/actor Johnny Tyrone, who is on a promotional tour of Pakistan of his new film. The film opens with a film within a film. It's quite a postmodern, knowing structure, and it starts with Elvis in a desert punching a cheetah with his mad kung fu skills, which is, you know, an arresting opening. That's, you know, going to grab the attention.
It could only be downhill from there, though.
And
really,
oh my god, it was. Yeah. So he's this film star with mad kung fu skills, and he's in the Middle East, and for some reason, well, the people watching this film are so impressed with his mad cheetah punching kung fu skills that they kidnap him and sort of blackmail him or pressure him into assassinating the king of, well, some mythical Middle Eastern country that's been hidden from the rest of the world for 2,000 years. So it's we're not in Ken Loach territory here, for starters. anything to add at this point, James?
Well, I have a number of problems with this film.
Should we skip the plot summary and get straight to the problems with this film?
Well, we don't want to give the whole thing away.
So you've got Elvis there. He's embroiled in an exciting world of glamorous Arabian Nights style intrigue. And there's romance, there's action, there's fighting.
There's singing.
And of course, it being an Elvis film, there is singing and there is dancing. So you get the general idea. That sounds like a very entertaining movie in the abstract. James, you mentioned problems with this film.
Yes, starting with the title, I'm afraid to say. Is it called Harum Scarum?
Harum Scarum, yes. Spell.
Well, that's the problem. Is it's supposed to be a play on... in that he does end up in a harem,
yes.
But it's a different word, and it's, you know, pronounced differently. And if it's harem scary,
yes,
then maybe it'd be all right.
That's true. I think it's basically the entire film's title is based on the fact that Elvis cannot pronounce the word harem, and so we get he pronounces it harem, and so that's what it's called. I think it is a phrase as well, though, isn't it? It's a
harem scarum.
What,
yes.
What's it mean? Showing your ignorance too. Good.
I think it kind of means crazy.
It means crazy.
Like, you know, going loco.
Okay. Oh well, that makes a certain amount of sense then.
The problem with saying these things is now it's been recorded, so you know people can very. I have no plausible deniability anymore. It's like you thought it meant that.
We should shy away from exposing our ignorance.
Yeah, no concrete statements.
Okay,
from now
well,
on.
I feel like this was a really shitty film, but I'm not going to definitively say that.
This film made me feel like vomiting.
It could be said that this was the worst piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. It could be said.
Now, you know, I'm an Elvis fan.
You are. You've been an Elvis fan for a long time, haven't you?
Many years.
And
yes.
You consider him a very talented artist and musician.
Don't go that far, but you know he can knock him out. He can knock him out.
Well,
the best of them.
How do you reconcile your respect and admiration for the king with his appearance in this film?
Well, it's quite easy because even though bodily he was in this film, spiritually he was just nowhere near the incredibly inconvincing fake Middle East setting,
yes.
Message, which was surprisingly lush.
It looks kind of like Southern California, really. I mean, they picked a really nice part of the Middle East to shoot this in.
But yeah, so he was just sleepwalking through. If you looked in your eyes, you could tell that, you know, he was focusing on one thing, and that was just the big wedge of money he was going to get paid for this, which, fair enough.
I think...
You know.
The phrase contractual obligations certainly would feature heavily in any, you know, history of how this film came to be made.
Although having said that, there are a few things that, if I was Elvis, probably would have, you know, set alarm bells ringing and made me want to call up Colonel Tom on the old blower.
Okay, what would they be?
For instance, the lime green trousers.
Yeah, the lime green, well, harem pants, I guess.
Yes. Kind of like a more flamboyant version of MC Hammer's trousers.
Imagine that. Lime green Hammer pants.
And it's not just one scene, this is the most of the film.
Yes.
It's just like this.
It starts off amusing and then you go, oh my god, he's really going to wear that, and it's just, you get a lot of glare off the TV. It's upsetting.
But yes, and then there's and quite often when I was thinking back on this film over the weeks and months that passed, you know, I was thinking, oh, it was quite funny, it was humorous, you know, it passed the time, we could mock the glaring plot holes and the fact that it made no sense and the very, very poor music. And then
awful music. That was the amazing thing. You know, it's an Elvis film. The point of it is him singing songs. Dreadful. I mean, just
I think
dull.
There was one good song in there. Was it the tambourine song?
Shake That Tambourine, I believe it's called. That was mildly entertaining.
He did shake that tambourine.
Certainly did.
Shook it like he meant
it. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you there. You were saying.
But yes, and then someone reminded me of the scene with the young girl.
Yeah. Do you want to describe that for our listeners?
Oh, dear. It was like, okay, so there's this young orphan girl. He's ended up in this den of thieves for some reason, which made no sense at all.
Thieves and,
and
prostitutes? Would that be a fair
yes.
word? Yes.
Quite clearly prostitutes.
So there's Elves in a den of thieves prostitutes.
And there's a young orphan girl there with her young orphan
aged
brother.
About, what would you say? Eight?
I'd say seven.
Seven, eight, yeah.
Seven or eight. Certainly not yet into double figures.
No, no. Well off double
and,
figures.
Now, Elvis being a big-hearted guy, he befriends this young girl.
Sounds nice. Heartwarming.
Sounds nice. And then, so, to repay his friendship, she sings him a song while shimmying around in a clearly provocative fashion, singing about how much she loved him. And, it was just, you could not help but shiver when you watched
that was kind
it.
Of the point when the laughter died, wasn't it? That was when sort of a chill went down your spine a bit, and you were, this is just kind of grotesque and unpleasant to watch. She was singing about her ambition to become a prostitute. Yes,
that was
he was
it,
encouraging
yeah.
her by teaching her how to shimmy better. It was odd, to say the least.
Yes.
And
laying his hands on
it was odd
her.
And uncomfortable, and drew certain parallels to Elvis's personal life that I could have done without, frankly.
And to be fair, that was the one point where he did seem to come alive.
His performance suddenly sprang into life, yes. Which is...
Yeah.
I think we should move away from that scene, because, again, I'm feeling that chill go down my spine. And, it's uncomfortable. It's almost as though... Well, on a more jocular note, there was the just general depiction of Middle Eastern culture and, Baghdad, apparently. Although... It claims on one hand to be set in Baghdad, and on the other hand to be set in a mythical realm isolated from world for 2,000 years. So I don't...
Well, there were the assassins, weren't they? They were the,
yes, there
the
was
bad.
The cult of assassins who were dressed identically, like literally identically, to Romulans from the 1960s version of Star Trek.
And also fought about as well as the 1960s version of Star Trek.
It was a really... I don't think whoever designed this film had even looked at a book. Not even a child's picture book. It was just sheer... Well, I guess they might be wearing something like this. Lunatic.
It makes you wonder how the assassins inspired so much fear over the ages, when really, to defeat one, all you had to do was kind of... shove him gently.
Yeah, just sort of give him a light push. It was the worst stage fighting I've ever seen in my life. You give them a light push and they sort of run backwards out of the room, screaming and flinging themselves against walls. It was very odd. So we've pretty much summed up that it's not by any means a good film, but it was a very entertaining film. And
it certainly was, and a film I would encourage my child to watch when he's
absolutely
old.
The best thing I think I can say about how much I enjoyed this film, or the experience of watching this film, you know, to be accurate, is that I did have a very bad cold at the time. I had actually lost my voice. It pained me to swallow. I could barely speak, but I still shouted abuse and sarcasm at the screen for the entire duration of this film, because I couldn't not make fun of it. It was...
You're a trooper, you know that.
I really... And the next day, I couldn't talk at all. But it was worth it, because it was
very good fun.
That was
some fine mocking we managed, yes. We should have just done a live feed. That would have been a...
There's an idea for future instalments.
An alternative director. Although I would love to hear the director's commentary on that.
Oh, man, it'd be 2 minutes long. It'd be... Look,
why?
I got paid. It was an Elvis film. Do you know Elvis made 31 films?
I did know that. But I did when I was reading on Wikipedia. see on this film that many Elvis fans consider this one his worst.
Many Elvis fans, and indeed anyone who's ever seen it.
Which, you know, the worst Elvis film, that is a pretty hard...
Well, he made 31 films, possibly two of those are sort of regarded by history as watchable. Of the 29 other films, which are not regarded as watchable, this is regarded as the worst. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad that we saw the worst. You wouldn't want to see just a run-of-the-mill crappy Elvis film, would you?
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. I think I've seen maybe the two good ones and this one, so I have no need to watch
exactly.
any others now.
And neither does anyone else. They can actually officially now be deleted from all forms of storage, all electronic media. We don't need to archive these for the future. No one cares. Get rid of them. Okay.
Destroy all media.
So, anything else or points out of 10?
Points out of 10, I think.
Okay, points out of 10 for... This is my problem. Points out of 10 for the actual artistic merit of the film or for the amusement derived from...
I think just the whole general experience.
Okay, I'd give it a 5. It balances out.
5.6, I think.
5.6, that's quite specific.
Yeah, it's just edging into, you know, so bad it's good territory.
Yes, I'm not usually a fan of the so bad it's good idea since I was in my teens, perhaps. But yeah, this one you really got to see. While drinking, of course. Okay, so that averages out at 5.3 out of 10.
There we go.
Which is really generous for what I've described as one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Next review trumps your $3.99 for Harum Scarum by costing a whole pound from the works. So £1. So that is your guarantee of quality. First of all, you're getting it from the works. Secondly, it's not even worth £2.
Yeah, that's some pretty low
expectations.
Yeah,
buying a blank DVD, I think, is probably more expensive than buying this.
And probably more enjoyable.
Anyway,
what did you
for
pay
for a pound?
£1
I got Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Well, that sounds pretty entertaining.
What's that,
James?
Basically, it's a 1980s cartoon of the things making into giant robot genre, which is a fairly small genre.
Stuff that turns into a giant robot genre. It's a small but well-defined genre, I think.
To be honest, I think it is actually the best genre in the world.
Absolutely. It holds a very special place in my heart, as you know. But I was thinking about this, actually, and it's not a small genre at all. Like, and it's not even an obscure Japanese thing. It's a huge genre all over the world.
Things turn into giant robots.
And has been for the last 15 years or so, due to the... bloody the Power Rangers,
I didn't even think about them.
Various iterations of the Power Rangers franchise have been running non-stop, as far as I can tell, since we were kids. Well, you know, since we were just coming to the end of being kids, I guess. And, you know, it's on all the time, and kids still love it, and, you know, that is a clear and perfect, you know, platonic form of the five things turning into one big robot thing.
I think it's the Last of the Summer Wine phenomenon. In that, you know, no one you know watches it. You have no idea even that they were still making it, but someone is, and someone's watching it. And
well, it's because no one you know is in the demographic for it. So with Last of the Summer Wine, you don't hang out with a bunch of old people. And for this, you have a kid, but he's too young for it, and you're too old for it, so it falls in the gap.
I can live with that, to be honest.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying, it did occur to me while reflecting on Voltron that actually it's an early-ish, I guess, example of something which is, you know, still a very, you know, valid and money-making form these days.
Well, maybe a topic for another day is how all these things which we were mad on when we were kids are now, you know, so much ingrained into popular culture that it actually becomes a bit boring, you know?
You're saying that things that turn into a robot are a bit boring?
Well, this was very boring, to be honest.
Okay, shall we get into the actual review then? And
yeah, so Voltron.
Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Defender of the Universe. The plot seemed to revolve around, there were some good white people, and there were some bad blue people.
Yes.
And the only reason that you knew one was good and one was bad, because they were doing exactly the same things.
Yes.
They were both trying to find empty planets and colonize them. So, you know, there was nothing morally between them there. But the only reason you know one was good and one was bad was because one kind of talked like this and was a... Bah! And the other one had Australian accents. Okay.
and of course, the clearest delineator, you know, as you alluded to there, one was a bunch of white people and one was a bunch of creepy-looking purple people.
And the white people kept on saying how they were good.
They did refer to themselves as the good ones. So that helped clue you in, yeah. The good planets of the solar system.
Yes. So basically, everyone was running out of... They need more Lebensraum. So they were all trying to expand.
Yes.
And it was just a race to see. And just so there were two episodes.
To be specific, they had run out of room in their own galaxy. So they needed to go and look for planets to colonise in nearby galaxies.
Yes.
I just want to just mention that, because I'll come back to that point later.
I bet everyone's very eager now to hear where you're going with that. So two episodes, one plot. Basically, they arrive at a planet, and the other guys get there at the same time.
So our heroes, this sort of, it's a bit like Star Trek, I guess. It's a big spaceship full of the Galactic Alliance, heroic space
Galactic
explorers.
Alliance and their 15-man army.
Yes.
Well, 15 man, I think there may be a couple of chicks in there.
It's hard to tell. They really weren't memorably defined characters, were they?
I don't know. One of them had an Australian accent.
That is the only one I could remember anything about, and you just trumped me on it, yeah.
But to be fair, they did have an army, a navy, and an air force.
They did.
Five in each, to be fair.
I respect anyone who goes off to explore distant galaxies and takes a submarine with them. That's thinking ahead.
So, but the problem was, the land team could fly and the sea team could fly, which makes you wonder what the point of the air team was.
It took away the USP of the air team, is that what you're saying?
That is precisely what I'm saying. Maybe they were just better at flying than the other
team. So each episode they go to some planet that involves a little bit of light land, sea and air exploration. The five members of each team, and then, well, they have a fight with something. There's some robots.
They have to make it very clear that they're robots, because they're blowing them up left, right, and centre.
Joy of being violent for a children's cartoon. There is, you know.
Even though the people, they are actual people on the spaceships. They're none of those in the things they send out. Ooh, no, no.
Even though they look like people.
They're actually
look
robots,
speak,
even though they
and
have the
scream
feelings
like people,
of people.
But they're robots, so it's fine.
Sentient, but
in one scene, they actually, you know, burn out cigarettes on one of their arms and then wee on him as he dies. But it's okay because he's a robot. Yeah, air quotes.
Yeah, it'll probably just be repaired.
Disturbing stuff.
So so they fight them for a bit, and they get their asses handed to them, and then they turn into Voltron, who's the...
They can't beat him as 15 little spaceships, so what do they do?
Yeah, so these 15 spaceships turn into one robot.
Mm.
Which, I don't know, I think, as you were saying earlier about Power Rangers, it's five robots into one robot.
That's the classic formation, yes.
15. 15 just, A, seems rather excessive on the poor kids who have to buy them all. But B,
well, I think that was the primary motivation, yes.
You know, it must be so easy for just one of them to get a bit drunk and wander off somewhere, and then he hasn't got a thigh, you know?
That's true. You are exposing yourself to, you know, all sorts of problems with absenteeism, sickness.
Or just, you know, one of them getting blown up. Just one of them getting blown up, and, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
So,
It's a high-risk design. It's quite a rubbish design also, because once they do turn into the giant robot, which is the only thing that can fight anything, they only have 5 minutes of nuclear power, because that's how badass Voltron is. He's running on nuclear power. But only for 5 minutes, and then I guess they all just sort of go into sleep mode or something. Fortunately, he usually seems to win all his fights within the 5 minute time frame.
About 4 minutes, okay. 53, I think, is his general point.
Yeah. But, okay, so you're mocking this. You're not impressed with Voltron Defender of the Universe, I take it?
It just seemed a bit weak to me. A bit thin.
A bit thin, yes. The character-wise, there was absolutely nothing there. As we say, there was one guy who was Australian. And it was odd how, you know, weak the motivations or explanation of the villains were. Like, they were villains, as you say, for absolutely no reason. They were doing exactly the same thing as the other guys. Not even that they were both looking for planets. It wasn't even that the bad guys were looking for planets in an evil way. They were looking for unoccupied planets and then, you know, starting their own terraforming processes.
Yeah, something which the good guys consistently didn't bother with. If it wasn't all there on a plate, you know, sod it. I haven't got 10 years to wait for the Genesis effect or whatever.
No, exactly. One thing that's very, very clear from a viewing of this program is that it's an absolute hatchet job of, you know, the original Japanese series, or possibly several, just whacked together with no regard or care, probably not even translated, but just made up again on the spot by some guy getting paid 20 quid to write it for the day.
I think it was about 30 people, judging by the credits.
You wouldn't have told that, though, would you?
Well, the credits as well, I mean, that was something that really got me. So basically, the credits went on for about 5 minutes, as children's cartoon credits used to do.
Yes.
But you have one line of original animation by Takeni Studio, or whoever it was.
Yes.
And that's it. So the people that, you know, come up with the original story, come up with all the character design, come up with all the actual animation, one line. The people who had dubbed it over poorly and mangled the plot.
Butchered the plot and the entire concept. Yes. I did look this up, because I'm a studious and devoted reviewer, and it's at least a couple of different series.
This is what really burned me up, actually. Carry on.
It's a couple of different series hatcheted together and turned into Voltron Defender of the Universe. What I wondered after watching it was, I was pretty sure that wasn't what I remembered Voltron as being like when I was a kid, because I did have vague memories of Voltron from childhood. And it was lions, wasn't it?
It was lions. That was what I wanted. That was when I saw Voltron. I thought, oh my God, because Voltron, you know, because we spent, what, about 3 months in the States when we were kids?
We did, yes.
And obviously, that was the home of children's cartoons at the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, so, the pretending to be the home, using stuff it had actually imported.
Oh, yeah, it didn't do any work.
Japan. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, compared to what Britain was pouring out, you know, that was the place to be.
Yeah, and certainly for my sensibilities at the time, yes, absolutely. We were in Transformers land.
Well, exactly. And I think almost up there with Transformers when we were over there was Voltron, which was just, you know, dopest, deafest, sweetest, you know, robot lions turn into giant robot.
Yeah.
What's not to love?
It's pretty good. Voltron seems like it has quite a fond following to this day in the hip-hop community. I've seen various videos and songs and stuff riffing on the idea of Voltron. There's one song called Funky Voltron, which is awesome. And there was...
Yeah, and how many of those do you think were written about the submarine?
Absolutely none, no. All of those are going with the standard 5 different coloured lions turned into a big robot, Voltron. So this, I don't know what this was. It was some sort of offshoot or early tryout version or...
Yeah, but I mean, it was so harsh because we came back to poor old Blighty and you could get Transformers, you could get Action Force, but Voltron, nowhere to be seen.
No.
So, and this was in the days before YouTube or whatever.
Quite a long time before the days of YouTube, yes.
At least 2 months before YouTube came about.
2 months. And
so there was nothing, that was it. We had to go completely cold turkey on Voltron.
Was that hard for you, James?
The scars are still there. And so that was why I was so excited when I saw it. And, you know, I think we discussed this with Quantum Leap, but it's always a bit of a danger when you revisit something that you were so
and
mad
yet
on
you
as a child.
Keep on doing it.
Well, I haven't actually seen Quantum Leap again then, so that one's still out there. But, yeah, and then this comes along, and it says it's Voltron, and it's there's not a giant robot lion.
No.
Anyway,
no, but it did resolve a question that I'd always wondered about, because I did distinctly remember, this is really fascinating stuff, isn't it? We're getting into some really interesting areas for people that aren't us. But I remember from I do have a distinct memory from childhood of, you know, there was the Lion Voltron, I got that, everyone knew about that, but I remember this other Voltron, it was like Super Voltron, and in my head, because, you know, when you're a kid, everything's 10 times more amazing than it actually is, in my head it was made up of hundreds of spaceships that all came together in the most amazing thing you'd ever seen and formed this super incredible giant robot, which was this show, but I'd never heard or seen any reference to that anywhere since, like in the intervening 20-odd years. And I wondered if I'd sort of imagined it or if I'd dreamt the whole thing, but it turns out it was just this piece of crap.
And then you come across it in the works
and
there's
a semi-mythical childhood memory just turned out to be a piece of crap, really.
Yeah, leave well enough alone, I think, is the message.
That seems to be the message we're learning today.
Anyway, so, marks, and I make this very clear, marks for Voltron Defender of the Universe.
I just one point I wanted to make about.
Oh, of course, sorry.
Was the plot hinges around them running out of room in their galaxy and travelling over to the next galaxy to look for more planets.
Oh, your galaxy point. Sorry, yes, we couldn't leave without the galaxy point.
No, well, I just wanted to make the point that they must have been quite busy in their galaxy, because there are 100 billion stars in our galaxy. The radius of our galaxy is 300 quadrillion miles. And there, you know, according to current thinking, there are around about, you know, give or take, you know, factor of 10, there are about 10 billion inhabitable planets in our galaxy. That's 10 billion planets. Each of which, you know, assuming, well, each of which presumably could support a varying range of people, but, you know, more than a couple, because it's a fucking planet.
Maybe people like big gardens in the future.
We're dealing with some astronomically
really
large numbers here. Like, unimaginably, inconceivably vast numbers. But they ran out of space, so they sent 15 guys out to look...
That's all they could spare.
To look slowly on a one-by-one basis for more planets. Although there were other people there already.
Yeah, so even though they had the technology for giant robots,
couldn't manage starships, telescopes. Intergalactic travel, they couldn't, you know, invent birth control. It seems odd to me, and I just wanted to point that out.
That was a good glaring inconsistency.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I pointed out the glaring inconsistency in the early 1980s.
Way to shoot that fish in the barrel.
It just seemed like they kind of were using words like galaxy, universe, and solar system interchangeably. You know what I mean?
Almost like they didn't care.
And nuclear and... Yeah, you're right. It was almost exactly as if they didn't care. Okay, so yeah, what would you give...
Taking the Elvis approach to...
It was the Elvis of Japanese giant robot animation.
I would have to give it a so bad it's bad 3 out of 10, I think.
That's low. That's harsh. I'm torn because it was absolutely turgid, and just not even entertaining to watch. It was, I would not sit and watch that without someone to make fun of it with for more than two seconds. But it was a bunch of spaceships coming together to form a giant robot, and I do like giant robots, and at the point...
That 1 20-second sequence of each episode was quite good.
That one sequence that they used in each episode where the animation quality suddenly shot through the roof, that was very entertaining, and then, you know, the giant robot would smash some shit up with his big giant robot sword, and I'm not going to ever not want to see that, you know. So I would give it enormously generous 6 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah.
So it averages out at
4.5.
4.5 out of 10. That's been a high scoring round today here on Unified Review Theory.
and giving people an insight into how we spend our free
time. That's what we do on holiday. Look, we have young children. We take small pleasures where possible.
Yes. Anyway. So, yeah, so that's it for this week. But
this week. Because we'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week. Assuming that you save these up and listen to them at weekly intervals.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be back. We'll try and do it more often because, you know, we enjoy it. So we'll try and do it more often. It's complicated. But yeah, we'll be back with another session of reviews. We'll keep updating the blog, which is at urt.blogspot.com. You can follow us on Twitter at urtheory on Twitter, and we'll obviously mention whenever there's going to be a new podcast, which will be, I can safely say, sometime between next week and never, ever, ever.
And the point when we have to leave this galaxy to find a new place.
When we run out of room in this galaxy, we'll do another podcast. That seems reasonable.
And if anyone wants to send in any ideas for reviews, feel free through Twitter or through email or through our Facebook group, which now I forgot.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because no one cares about Facebook anymore.
Facebook's dead, man. Move on. Let it go. Yeah, but it's nice to get ideas for stuff to review because then we don't have to think of them ourselves. And yes, we'll be back next time in the podcast with some more reviews of stuff. And next time, we promise, we'll review some stuff that other people might possibly have seen, heard of, or care about. How's that for an idea?
I think you're making promises that we probably won't keep.
I'm going to really try, because I actually was starting to feel quite bad for anyone who was listening to this who wasn't me, as I discussed my childhood memories of watching TV.
I wouldn't worry too much about it, Bill.
No, you're probably right. You're probably right. Okay, so that's a wrap.
Okay, bye.
Bye.